Hey, everybody. Today on the Charlie Kirk Show, what's happening in American Christianity? What if I told you that there was a campaign from the federal government to try and keep your church closed? Do you have a pastor that hasn't been making sense in the last couple of years? Well, maybe they're involved in the federal government. Well, an amazing reporter from the Daily Wire shows how the federal government had a deliberate campaign to infiltrate churches across the country and maybe your church. How the atheistic secular government infiltrated churches across the country. That's our conversation today. If you want to get involved with Turning Point USA, go to tpusa.com. Start a high school or college chapter today at tpusa.com, Turning Point USA. Turning Point USA, we're making hope happen every single day. We're pushing forward where it matters most on college and high school campuses across the country to educate them, to educate your kids and grandkids around the values that have made America the most exceptional country on the planet. Come to our Young Women's Leadership Summit. Boy, do we have an amazing Young Women's Leadership Summit agenda coming up. Here are just some of the confirmed speakers as of today. Alex Clark, Candace Owens, Governor Noem, Kayleigh McEnany, Laura Trump, Sarah Palin, Dana Lash, Ali Stuckey, and Lila Rose, and more. tpusa.com/YWLS. Also come to our Student Action Summit, tpusa.com/SAS, and come to our campus tour, Boulder, Berkeley, Fullerton, Milwaukee, tpusa.com/tour. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage. For personalized loan services you can count on, go to andrewandtodd.com, the wonderful andrewandtodd.com. So let's dive into a very important story that's happening and that has happened, which is who is controlling the American church? What if I told you that the federal government had infiltrated parts of American evangelical Christianity? Well, Megan Basham from the Daily Wire has done some amazing investigative reporting on this and research. Megan, welcome to the Charlie Kirk Show.
Thanks so much for having me, Charlie.
So, Megan, tell us, you had an amazing video that I watched, and I wanted to have you on the program. So build it out for us. How was the American church really infiltrated by left-wing COVID narratives in the midst of the last 2 years?
Well, you know, we've done a couple of extensive reports on this, and they were all kind of condensed in that video. And it really started at the beginning of COVID when the federal government dispatched Francis Collins to, he is the head of the NIH, the National Institutes of Health, Anthony Fauci's boss. And he was dispatched to convince evangelicals to stop being resistant. And he's been very clear and on record, on tape, saying, I was sent to deal with evangelical resistance to lockdowns, to mask mandates, to vaccine mandates. So he went into churches. He had a lot of really strong relationships with what you might call the elite evangelical class, some very well-known pastors like Tim Keller, Rick Warren, Ed Stetzer at the Billy Graham Center at Wheaton College, Russell Moore, who was then head of the public policy arm of the largest Protestant denomination in the U.S., which is the Southern Baptist Convention. So just some really influential people. And he drew on those friendships to do interviews, podcasts, where he was presented as this strong Christian brother to come on and give advice on how and why to submit to all of these COVID rules. And when he presented these things, he didn't do it just from a medical point of view. He, along with these pastors, presented it as, this is how you show your love for Jesus. This is how you obey the gospel. And that was really something that they didn't just say, look, we're presenting a scientific point of view. Here is one scientist you might want to listen to. They didn't present any counter points of view from the scientific community, but that they really punched it up with, if you want to love your neighbor, if you want to obey Christ, this is how you do it.
Was there any money exchanged from the federal government to these churches?
So that's something that I'm still looking into, because I can tell you that with the Billy Graham Center at Wheaton College, they announced that they were specifically partnering with the CDC to launch a website called Coronavirus and the Church. And so that's something that I am still trying. I've got a FOIA request in, and I'm looking into that, because that was a very formal partnership that they were saying, we are doing this with the NIH and the CDC.
So was Francis Collins being transparent throughout all of this in his dealings with these church leaders? I suppose this kind of government church collusion, most Christians didn't really realize this was happening.
No, I don't think most people did. And, you know, that was really a big part of the issue, was as he was presented on these platforms, he was called again and again, this is a strong Christian brother. This is a man who loves the Lord, just like you. And that was kind of the main thrust of it. He's just like you. He's somebody who loves the Lord, who goes to church, who follows Jesus. Well, then you dig into Francis Collins' record, and none of this was presented by any of these Christian leaders. And you find out that under his leadership, the NIH funded record level fetal tissue research, meaning harvesting organs, harvesting tissue from aborted babies, sometimes full term, sometimes past term. There has even been some reporting that I am still looking into. Expert medical witnesses have said some of the harvesting that occurred had to have been done to still living infants. And on top of that, Francis Collins launched an initiative for sexual and gender minority research. So if, you know, you hear that term, you go, I don't know what that means. Well, what it means is he personally put his name, launched this initiative, said, I am an ally of the trans community. And one of the things he funded was research to give opposite sex hormones to children as young as 8, to give mastectomies to girls as young as 13. So that was the kind of research that Francis Collins was funding during his tenure at the NIH. And none of that was disclosed. Now, some of these leaders, I go, did Timothy Keller know about this? I don't know, but I know for sure that Russell Moore did, because we obtained leaked audio from an event at the University of Chicago in October with Russell Moore and Francis Collins. And at that event, Francis Collins again defended that type of research. And Russell Moore said, well, you know, I don't know that I agree with it, but I can still respect him as a Christian brother. So it was very clear that Russell Moore knew. And none of these leaders, none of these Christian leaders, none of these pastors have answered any questions about what they knew when and why they platformed Francis Collins the way they did. And they certainly won't talk to me.
Yeah. So we do know this was a formal NIH initiative. And we know that Francis Collins used government resources behind it. And just so everyone that's listening to understand that might not be in the Christian circles, Rick Warren, Timothy Keller, Ed Stetzer, these are big deals in American Christianity. They have massive churches. They have significant followings. They get published in all of the kind of mainline Christian journals. Do you have suspicion or evidence that there was something beyond just the interviews that happened between Collins and Warren? Was there something deeper happening that reached more pastors that impacted the kind of middle-level churches across the country?
Well, you know, one of the things that Francis Collins said in his interview with Warren and with some of these other pastors was that he really encouraged them to convince other pastors, to convince the people in the pews, convince them to sign on with these mandates, convince them to, you know, do what the government is asking them to do. And in all of these interviews, Warren in particular, Keller also, and T. Wright were very disparaging of the pastors, like, say, John MacArthur in Los Angeles, who were resisting COVID mandates and lockdowns. So, you know, I'm still looking into some of this. One thing I can tell you that really set off alarm bells for me was when Rick Warren explained where he met Francis Collins, and where he met him was at Davos with the World Economic Forum.
Yes. Rick Warren was in Davos?
Yeah. And so I am still, you know, and I, you poke around, and I will tell you what, it's really hard to get some information about that, going, what was Rick Warren doing at Davos? What is a pastor doing there? And, you know, as you continue to unfold it, some interesting little color to this story is that so many of these guys, Tim Keller, N.T. Wright, Russell Moore, Pete Winner at the Atlantic, were connected to Francis Collins via this apparently very elite book club that they're all a member of. And, you know, when you dug through all of the interviews and reports, they all kept mentioning this book club that they're all a member of. And so, you go, okay, what were the conversations at that book club where they all just ended up on each other's platforms, praising each other, coming on to do interviews? And so it's just this very, you know, elbow rubbing, Tony set of people that seem to be working to prop each other up.
Yeah, I mean, I guarantee you there was money exchanged. I don't know if you'll ever be able to prove it, but Rick Warren going to Davos and Ed Stetzer and Russell Moore, these are all the social justice Christians that impact right. so many of our listeners. And this is an important wrinkle that the tyrannical lockdown policy, they saw some looming and bubbling up resistance, so they deployed Fauci's boss, not just Fauci, but the person on top of Fauci. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Into the trenches to try and say, no, it's actually the loving thing and the Christian thing to lock down all society. And they fought, they attacked people that stayed open, like Rob McCoy and like Jack Hibbs and like so many others. So very important reporting. And I hope that these pastors will be held accountable for the evil that they did. Big Tech is monitoring, censoring, mining, and selling your online information. And Squad Pod is the solution. 100% U.S. programmed, owned and operated, Squad Pod is a convenient all-in-one application supporting your private connection with others of your choice. Safety brings together your friends, family, team, club business, or congregation with Squad Pod's chat, document sharing, discussion, and televideo capabilities. The Squad Pod application is encrypted, protecting your communications and content without annoying advertisements. They do not censor, mine, profile, or sell your information. I have gotten to know the Squad Pod team quite well, and they are true patriots of the mission of dedicating themselves to your privacy, safety, and freedom of speech. Join myself and other organizations such as Turning Point USA, nonprofits, and churches by adopting Squad Pod as your collaboration platform. Take back control of your privacy by visiting squadpod.com/Charlie. That is squadpod.com/Charlie. Let's play Cut 34, which was the video that kind of prompted this interview. Play Cut 34, please.
The federal government used evangelical leaders to spread COVID propaganda. But Collins and Fauci didn't just rely on the mainstream media to get their messages out to the public. There's also evidence that Collins specifically tapped into his friendships with numerous high-profile pastors and church leaders to further spread the government's COVID narratives. These weren't just messages about getting vaccinated, but also arguing for government vaccine mandates. Collins also used the platforms of his church leader friends to urge pastors to teach their congregations that if they wanted to obey Jesus' command to love their neighbors, then they must comply with government mandates on keeping churches closed and businesses closed and keeping children masked.
So what do these pastors say now, Megan, when you ask them about their alliance with these secular pro-trans, pro-fetal tissue cell lockdown government officials?
But, you know, I wish I could tell you that they're saying anything. I can't get a response from any of them. You know, I had a scheduled interview with Francis Collins himself, and he canceled on me when he was running about 15 minutes late, you know, past the time of our interview. I then reached out to the NIH and spoke with some of their representatives, continuing to try to get an interview with him. No luck. Same thing with Russell Moore. I've reached out to him multiple times. There's always some scheduling conflict. I actually ran into him at an airport, and you know, being an intrepid journalist, I was standing right in line behind him. We were on the same flight. And I said, excuse me, Dr. Moore, what a coincidence. Megan Basham with the Daily Wire. Can I ask you about your relationship with Francis Collins? And he said, no, I can't talk about that. Call my office, which of course I did, of course. And once again, he had scheduling conflicts and could not speak to me. And you know, Charlie, a really important point I wanted to make, particularly about Moore, was that all of these people presented Francis Collins, along with being a Christian brother, they presented him as politically neutral. So, you know, he put himself out there as, look, I am not a political guy. I am a scientist. I am a doctor. I'm just here representing the National Institutes of Health. This is not about partisanship. Well, in that leaked audio that came out of the University of Chicago event in David Axelrod's Institute of Politics, where he did not know he was being recorded, he and Moore lambasted white evangelicals. So they talked about white evangelicals voting for Trump. He specifically said that the white evangelicals who voted for Trump made a devil's bargain. And he blamed former President Trump for hundreds of thousands of COVID deaths, which is frankly ridiculous from a scientific point of view, because under Trump, we had much fewer COVID deaths than we have had under Biden, and he had a better record, and he wasn't benefiting from the already in place vaccine and policies that the Trump administration had put in place. So all of this notion that he was this non-political actor was just blown out of the water with this leaked audio. It became very clear that he's a partisan, and it became very clear that Russell Moore is also a partisan, and that was also probably a motivating factor for what they were out there doing in furthering the Biden administration, in particular's COVID narratives.
Let's play cut 35, please. Continues from your video. Play cut 35.
The names of the pastors and organizations who held Collins out as the authoritative voice Christians should listen to during the pandemic are some of the most well-known in American Protestant circles. Christianity Today magazine, the Billy Graham Center, missions expert Ed Stetzer, the Gospel Coalition, Pastor Timothy Keller, theologian N.T. Wright, the Ethics and Religious Liberty Center, Russell Moore. All of them were telling lay Christians in the pews that they should rely on Collins for COVID advice.
Incredible. Hard to believe that there's not money behind that.
Well, especially when you consider that, you know, Collins' scientific advice was not very good either, given as short a period of time as September. He was arguing that children still need to be masked. Now, we know that that is ridiculous. We now know that cloth masks don't have much of an effect. And, you know, just even until just a few months ago, he was holding up a cloth mask saying this is a life-saving device. Well, that's something that even the CDC has backed away from. At that University of Chicago event in October, he was saying that we need to mandate vaccines with the threat of job loss. I mean, he was very clear, like he thinks it is fine for people to be fired and lose their jobs for refusing to take the vaccine. And his reasoning was so that they don't spread the virus. Look, well, that is also scientifically ridiculous.
Yeah. DailyWire.com, your reporting's been great. If anyone listening has given money or attends any of these fraudsters' churches, please email them and say, why would you do this? Why did you bend a knee to the government while churches were attacked and pastors were fined and some arrested? It's just extraordinary. Thank you so much for joining us.
Absolutely.
Phenomenal reporting and some of the most important as we try to unpack what happened during the Fauci virus hysteria. Thank you so much. Look, everybody, I know you love freedom and you want to defend it. And I know you love the Constitution. It's a beautiful document, and so do I. And it's the same with Hillsdale College, the best liberal arts college in America. Hillsdale's mission is pursuing truth and defending liberty. It gives its undergraduate and graduate students the best education and is working to make this education available to all, from offering free online courses to helping support K-12 schools. But today I want to tell you about Hillsdale's amazing free monthly digest of liberty. It's called Imprimis. Over 6 million households and businesses receive Imprimis for free each month. And you can join them by subscribing right now at charlieforhillsdale.com. That's charlieforhillsdale.com. There's no strings attached while you're there. Take an online course. Take their Aristotle course. Take their Winston Churchill course. Take their Western theology course. Generous donors who love freedom make it possible for Hillsdale to send you Imprimis for free. Imprimis is one of my favorite publications, and Imprimis means in the first place. It's short, smart, useful, and fun. Start receiving your own free copy of this great digest of liberty and take an online course while you're at it. Enroll. Their Great American Story course is incredible. Visit charlieforhillsdale.com. That's charlieforhillsdale.com. Check it out right now, charlieforhillsdale.com. The elites are losing their mind. The people on top are just, they are not happy. Elon Musk, now the largest shareholder of Twitter, and the response has been so interesting. Wall Street Journal. Musk acquires 9% of Twitter, becoming its top shareholder. Elon Musk disclosed a 9% stake in Twitter. The surprise move sent Twitter stock up 27% on Monday. In the securities filing, Monday, Mr. Musk reported owning nearly 73.5 million shares of Twitter, and he has agreed to buy up to more than 14.9% while on the board, and he is now on the board of directors. How many people are on the board of directors now? This is from Parag Agarwal, who has said, quote, Mr. Musk, of the appointment of Mr. Musk as a director. I would just love to see the board meetings of Elon Musk and Parag Agarwal, the anti-American, anti-free speech CEO of Twitter, hates our values, directly at war with them. I'm still banned from Twitter. Maybe Elon Musk is coming to the rescue. Now, I don't like taking credit for things, and I don't even think that it would be right if I did. But I think us protesting Twitter and not deleting the tweet definitely played a role. It definitely was part of it. I can't stand when people say, I did this. Okay, enough. But it was Babylon Bee, and then us, and then I texted Tucker, and then Tucker tweeted up both Babylon Bee and us. Tucker did a segment on it. And Elon does have a relationship with the Babylon Bee, which helped a lot. And there's new revelations that the Babylon Bee and Elon Musk talked privately. Tucker got suspended. We're suspended. Everybody got suspended. And now Twitter's going to have to deal with Elon Musk in the boardroom. Tucker Carlson had some thoughts on this. Let's play cut 49.
Let's be very clear. This is not a business transaction. It's much bigger than that. Elon Musk is a massive threat to the way things are. So, by definition, it will not be long before they are calling him a racist. You can mark your calendar. Tonight, there are Democratic operatives studying everything Elon Musk has ever said in public. They're preparing one of the nastiest campaigns of character assassination in memory. They have no choice but to do this. Restoring free speech to Twitter is the greatest possible threat to the people in charge. They have to control the information. If they don't, they fall.
They need suppression. They need to be able to censor people. Now, Tucker's right that they're going to send every one of their scum journalists after Elon Musk. We deal with these degenerates quite often. And they're going to fail. You know why? So let's pretend you're a reporter for the Huffington Post. Elon could just buy it. He could be like, I'm just going to buy it. I'm going to fire you. These people, they believe it's their mission to destroy others. I'm talking about these activists, the activist press. They're going to do everything they possibly can to try to suppress Elon Musk, but this is a power move. This is now a power shift where someone in power, Elon Musk, comes into a fight and starts to push back against the status quo. It's a change of terrain. Let's play cut 56. Jen Psaki was asked about this. Play cut 56.
I have a quick question on Elon Musk and him picking up a 9% stake in Twitter, which makes him the largest shareholder in the company. Obviously, the White House uses Twitter quite extensively, and Musk has been very critical of President Biden. I'm wondering if there is perhaps any recalibration of the use of the platform or to what extent the White House is using Twitter.
It's a decision of a private sector leader. I don't have any specific comment on it, but I expect we will continue to use Twitter, as you all will as well, I would expect.
Just the fact that they had to ask the question, Reuters White House correspondent Nandita Bose, or Bose or whatever, just shows you how far gone. Basically, they were trying to like egg them on, like, come on, it's going to become a right-wing platform. Are you guys going to protest it? Please tell us you're protesting. And Jen Psaki's like, yeah, well, I guess we'll keep on using it. So what is the current viewpoint of Twitter as we're still banned from Twitter? Well, Parag Agarwal, again, it's tough to understand what he's saying in this video. So good luck. Play cut 19.
Our role is not to be bound by the First Amendment, but our role is to serve a healthy public conversation. And our moves are reflective of things that we believe lead to a healthier public conversation. The kinds of things that we do to what about this is to focus less on thinking about free speech, but thinking about how the times have changed. One of the changes today that we see is speech is easy on the internet. Most people can speak. Where our role is particularly emphasized is who can be heard.
So yeah, if you didn't get a lot of that, I didn't either. You have to kind of read the transcript. Tough listen. But he's in charge of Twitter. He's in charge of what happens, what doesn't happen. Elon thinks this is wrong. Now, for all the people that are really angry about Elon, he is technically an African-American, so now you have an African-American that controls Twitter. Drives him nuts when you say that. He's from South Africa, of course. So this is a reshuffling of the power dynamics when it comes to speech in our country. So there are 12 members on the Twitter board of directors. There is Brett Taylor, who was the co-CEO of Salesforce, Parag Agrawal, the guy that you couldn't understand a word of what he was just saying, Mimi Alamahiyu, private partnership at MasterCard, Jack Dorsey, Agon Durban from Silver Lake, Martha Fox, don't know who that is, Amid Kordestani, former executive chairman of Twitter, Dr. Fei-Fei Li, no relation to Fang-Fang, I don't think, from Stanford, both from the Bay Area. Fang-Fang, of course, the lover of Swalwell. Patrick Pichette from Google. David Rosenblatt from FirstDibs.com. And Robert Zolik from AllianceBernstein Holding. So they have a board of directors, an audit committee, a compensation committee, a nominating and governance committee, a risk committee, all that. Them being publicly traded. And so the entire dynamic of this company is more than just the economics. And that's something where I think Twitter is now going to be challenged, because Elon doesn't really care about the money of this. He doesn't really care about the finances. Couldn't care less. He cares whether or not people will be able to speak freely and get their ideas out. I can't wait for that first board meeting. Like, why are you guys doing this? And by the way, what's so amazing is that Elon, at any point in the meeting, can be like, that's it. I'm going to buy another $10 billion. I'm going to buy more shares. He could end the meeting. And everyone in the room knows that because he's so wealthy. Elon has some mixed, I have some mixed views on Elon on some things, including Neuralink. But he's certainly right on the West's declining birth rate. Play cut 20.
Listen to this.
There are not enough people. I can't emphasize this enough. There are not enough people. I think one of the biggest risks to civilization is the low birth rate and the rapidly declining birth rate. And yet so many people, including smart people, think that there are too many people in the world and think that the population is growing out of control. It's completely the opposite. Please look at the numbers. If people don't have more children, civilization is going to crumble. Mark my words.
He's correct. Cut 21, Elon talks about how living forever on Earth, this kind of push towards eternity on Earth, not eternity in the spiritual realm, like Christian eternity, but people trying to prolong life here, it's actually a really bad thing for society. Play cut 21.
It is important for us to die because, you know, most of the times people don't change their mind, they just die. If we live forever, then we might become a very ossified society where new ideas cannot succeed. I'm not putting fun at age, I'm just saying if we've got people in very important positions that have to make decisions that are critical to the security of the country, they need to have sufficient presence of mind and cognitive ability to make those decisions well, because the whole country's depending on them.
You're not allowed to say any of those things. The regime believes the opposite. Too many people, live forever, get the population down to 500 people and do weed all day and do everything, you know, just don't ask any questions. And Elon, being a critic of wokeism, of these cancerous pathogens, these idea pathogens, I don't know how this is going to play out. But I know this, no one's richer than him. I know this, that he could take over the whole company and he might. Breaking in the last couple hours, Twitter has come out and they've come out and said, quote, we will not reinstate Trump despite Elon Musk vowing significant change to woke platform. We'll see. Elon could buy all you guys out. And people are already starting, all of a sudden, they're resigning from Twitter. I'm seeing this kind, some of these tweets. I will not stand for a platform that fights for hate speech. Okay. Go work for some Democrat super PAC. Basically what Twitter has become. The fight for free speech is fundamental to the entire civilization. And as we've played the tape of us trying to get closer to a new world order, free speech is a threat to the new world order. You know that Elon Musk is not part of any of that Davos crowd. He's not. He might show up to some of those meetings or whatever, but everything he talks about is at odds to that. Population collapse, not living forever, wokeism, against vaccine mandates. He is at direct odds with it. Now, again, I got plenty of problems with some of the things that Elon puts forward. The technological subservience, the overindulgence in green and clean energy, or allegedly clean energy, which it isn't. But I don't mind the fact that the World Economic Forum finally has a challenger who's richer than them. The World Economic Forum of Klaus Schwab, talking about the New World Order, In order to get the New World Order done, they need silence of the citizens. They need really you to turn you into subjects. They need silent subjects. Elon knows this. Elon knows that if people are quiet, tyranny will reign. So he wants more conversation. He wants the best ideas to win. He doesn't want stagnation. He wants creativity. He wants curiosity. If your idea is bad, then you'll be told it's bad and you got to defend yourself. So that where we are now, it's we're in this society where whoever has the most money and the most power and the bigger stick gets to determine who gets to speak. Well, guess what? Elon has the most money. His bank account is the biggest. That's why this is important. No one has a bigger bank account than him. Not Bill Gates, not Bezos, none of them. So therefore, the person with the biggest bank account, if they get to determine the rules of engagement, and those rules of engagement are going to be free speech, God bless him. It's just like Joe Rogan. Rogan and Musk are two of the most unexpected developments against the regime. And when I say regime, I mean not Biden. I mean the whole planet of World Economic Forum folks. They're going to try to destroy Musk like they tried with Rogan, but they failed with Rogan, and they're going to fail with Musk. Barack Obama was just at the White House with Joe Biden. Probably don't have enough time to get into all of that. There's this great video. The event kind of comes to an end, and everyone rushes over to be with Barack, Amy Klobuchar, Nancy Pelosi, and Joe Biden is just kind of left wandering aimlessly on stage. No one wants to be with Joe Biden. Oh, we do have the cut. Is it cut 60? Is that right? I'll narrate this. Okay, put it up, cut 60. All right, so the event is over. Joe Biden's looking for people to embrace him. Nope, not to the right. He looks at Obama, who's getting all the love as it pans out. And he just kind of does another U-turn. And he says, I don't know. And he just puts his hands out and says, I don't know. Aimlessly wanders. Old man aimlessly. Let's play that tape again. I want you on the live stream to ask yourself the question before we put that. Who's president of the United States? Watch this. Answer me, who's the president? Play tape. Who is the president here? This guy? Nope. No. Even the guy in the military turns his back on him. I don't think they could do that. The sergeant at arms turned their back on him. People coalesce around the power center the same way planets rotate around the sun. At events, you could see this. No, I mean that. I mean, when you're at CPAC or if you're at one of these events, when all of a sudden you kind of see the crowds, you're like, okay, who is it? What is it? Who is it? It's not to say that that's the most important depiction, but it tells you something. It also tells you in a room like that where there's quote-unquote important people like Pelosi and all these criminals, when they start to rotate around Obama and not Biden, Obama is the center of gravity. He is the center of this galaxy. And Joe Biden is Pluto, no longer deemed a planet. Okay, let's get to some more sound here. This whole thing here, this is just a short little story. We're going to have to build it out. So Senator Josh Hawley is trying to introduce legislation to make tougher sentences for child porn offenders. And Dick Durbin thinks that's not a good idea. Dick Durbin wants Josh Hawley, no, he wants child predators to be let off the hook, which kind of gets into what Rudy Giuliani was talking about. If you didn't get a chance to listen to that, listen to our episode with Rudy Giuliani about Hunter Biden and potentially having that on his laptop, allegedly. We can't confirm that. That's Rudy Giuliani that said that. Play cut 54.
These guidelines that you promulgated don't reflect the reality of today. We know as well that the guidelines were written, some were written in an era when the materials we're talking about were physical materials, and we now live in a world of internet and access to not just tens and hundreds, but thousands of images, if that is your decision.
If that is your decision. Is that your decision, Dick Durbin? Why do you have a soft spot for child pornographers? If that is your decision. What if the entire goal of having Ketanji Brown Jackson nominated, one of the other goals, was to move the Overton window on how we view child pedophilia and pornography? What if that was part of the goal? Senator Hawley wants to introduce tougher legislation because Ketanji Brown Jackson has a soft spot for these people. And Dick Durbin says, look, come on, what are you, crazy? They're looking at images. Not like they're doing anything wrong. They're trying to move the Overton window. Cut 58, Jen Psaki was asked about women's sports. We think Jen Psaki is a woman. Play cut 58.
Okay, a question about college sports. In some places like the Ivy League now, there are biological males competing against women. Does the White House think that is fair?
Well, I would note that we're not the governing body for the NCAA or any other system out there that I believe you're probably referring to the case over in swimming in the NCAA. We understand how important sports are to student athletes across the country, but the NCAA obviously makes puts these policies in place.
What a serpent. She's such a dark person, seriously. Dark soul. Not standing up for women's sports. It's unbelievable. Oh, you know, he was asking, do you think it's fair? Not whether or not you're on some sort of committee or any of that. I've had enough of these people. Email us your thoughts, freedom@charliekirk.com. Subscribe to the Charlie Kirk Show podcast. Take out your podcast application, type in Charlie Kirk Show, and hit subscribe. Jen Psaki can't leave the White House soon enough to go to MSNBC, where she'll be right amongst other colleagues. But I'll tell you what, there's a reckoning coming. This November, these people are going to pay a political price at every single level for what they've done, the damage they've done to our country. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Email us your thoughts, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. And subscribe to the Charlie Kirk Show podcast. Take out your podcast app, type in Charlie Kirk Show, and hit subscribe. Thanks so much for listening. God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.